quite as interested in building stuff. Well, turns out they are. And Kate has been able to do that and get them in here, and we have a couple of all-girls programs that we have as well. She's also doing some interesting things with blind students, and I'll let her elaborate on that. We have a program that has really taken the interest of the National Science Foundation and some other institutions around the, well, actually around the world, where we do astronomy for blind students. Now, I can tell by the look on everybody's face when we say blind astronomy tends to be a visual. Astronomy is, of course, a visual thing. And they think, well, how in the world can blind students look through a telescope? And so the answer is they don't look through the telescope. They use a CCD camera, very much like all scientists today do. There's not a whole lot of looking. It's more photographs that you would take with a CCD camera. And the trick is then, how does the blind student see that image? Well, in the same way that they would see anything else, we translate a visual image into a tactile image. So it prints out into a Braille version of an image, and they notate it in Braille. So that if they take a picture, let's say, of the Butterfly Nebula, they can actually, once it's printed out in Braille, they can actually feel on that piece of paper the sighted person would see, and it's quite remarkable.
As we sit here today, this is also the anniversary of Neil Armstrong landing on the moon 47 years ago. Back in 1969, actually. As you look back at your years here at Yerkes and your involvement, of course, with the University of Chicago, the importance of Yerkes here in Williams Bay, here in Wisconsin, just how important has this observatory been well over a century here in this area?
Well, of course, and a lot of people don't know this, we are the place that turned out some of the people that are so notable in the field of astronomy and astrophysics. Edwin Hubble got his Ph.D. here. This office was occupied by Chandra Sekhar, the guy that created or discovered the mathematical limit for determining black holes. There have been over the years a lot of involvement with people here at Yerkes Observatory. In the time that I've been here, and I started here 25 years ago, there have been some other things that have brought the observatory, brought it into focus, and I'm using that as a term that would be relevant here, because we added engineers here 25 years ago. As you probably recall, beyond managing the observatory, I'm also director of the University of Chicago's Engineering Center, which is university-wide, Argonne Lab, University of Chicago campus in Chicago. We currently have some people deployed at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory or at NASA Palmdale with one of our projects. So engineering has been quite an important thing here for the last 25 years, and we've done some remarkable things. We designed and completely built, including manufacturing in our machine shop, the Hawk camera for NASA for their SOFIA aircraft. Hawk is an acronym for High Resolution Airborne Wideband Camera. And that camera now, and it's a 1,300-pound payload, to put this into focus, 1,300-pound payload, is now in the NASA aircraft in Palmdale. It's flying, and it's getting data. And that was completely done here at Yerkes Observatory.
You mentioned Edwin Hubble and also Dr. Einstein. Do you always find it surprising that people are just not aware of so many incredible scientists over the years who have actually been here at Yerkes?
Well, it has not really been a matter of public awareness. Over the years, however, over the last, let's say, 10 or 15 years, it has become much, much more of an awareness because we've opened up the observatory to public programs, and with the education outreach and with our expanded tours program, this is becoming more and more apparent to the people in the community. Most importantly, and something that the public does not know, is that we recommissioned our great refractor, the 40-inch lens telescope that is the largest lens telescope in the world. We recommissioned it for public observing. So now the public can actually come in here, schedule some time with Dan Kaler, who is our director of tours, and get time on that big telescope, a telescope that Albert Einstein looked through at one time. And so this has been a remarkable fundraising tool for the observatory. And that's the purpose. We opened it up so that we could produce some revenues to support some of the programs here. Our programs, the reason we need that is we keep the cost of these programs at outreach and tours at a very, very low level, which enables people that would otherwise not be able to afford to do these things, enables them to come in and actually get to do things that people would otherwise not be able to do.
And my last question for you, when was the last time that you actually looked through that telescope with that 40-inch?
Well, I get to look through it all the time. And the last time I looked through it was about a month ago. I actually looked through it. We had what we had done, and the reason that I was looking through it, and I'm here every day. I can look through it anytime I want to. But we purchased a new set of eyepieces. We took off the old plate camera. Old plate camera had an eyepiece in it, but it wasn't very suitable for the public looking through it. You'd have to look through the plate camera first. We bought a full set of wonderful big eyepieces that match the telescope. And the viewing, the seeing through those new lenses is breathtaking.
As always, I appreciate the time that Jim takes when we have a chance to chat with him. And now we are moving to another section of the Yerkes Observatory. And I'm continuing now with my interview. And if you would introduce yourself and what your title is here at Yerkes and what you do.
My name is Frances DeLutri, and I am an educator here at Yerkes Observatory. I've worked here in several different capacities. I've worked with workshops through the years. This particular summer, I am carrying the workshop called Buckle Up for the Kuiper Belt, and it's for 7th and 8th grade students. I am also involved with an entity called Enterprise in Space, and that group is collaborating with Yerkes to do some very amazing things.
So the first question that comes to mind, for me at least, is how did you get involved with and interested in space? At what age? And what was it for you as a young person that got you interested in all of this?
Way, way back, I was standing outside with my granddad, and he said, "Let's look overhead, and there's going to be a satellite that comes by." I didn't even know what a satellite was. I was young, and we watched Sputnik go by, and we talked about the impressiveness of what this was all about. And from that moment on, I looked up. I wondered what else I would see. I imagined seeing many, many other things move across the sky that weren't airplanes. And so that really hooked me way, way, way back. I didn't have much opportunity to learn about space or astronomy at that time. My schools didn't have the sort of things that I was interested in. So I took my own opportunity to go to the public library and learn what I could from there. And whenever I could find a speaker, I would just pop in and listen to what I could.
We're sitting here today at Yerkes. This is July the 20th, and this is the 47th anniversary of Neil Armstrong on the moon. What does that mean to you?
You know, when I first saw the footage, it was just unbelievable, but it seemed so regular. It didn't seem like it was really a different place. It just seemed like he was stepping off a ladder onto ground. I had to remind myself of where he was and how momentous this was. So I think when I think about that moment, of course, it was such an important moment. It just seemed so natural that it should happen. I had imagined things like that happening for so long.
The programs that you're working on here, maybe if you could just give maybe a 30-second synopsis of what the two programs that you are working on this summer and that you continue to work on here at Yerkes.
Yerkes has been presenting workshops for students for quite some time and has presented several this summer. I am carrying the last workshop, which is Buckle Up for the Kuiper Belt. So students going into 7th and 8th grade are learning about what's beyond Pluto and the possibilities of another planet and why orbits are like they are, which they're very strange out there. So many of the students that are coming into the program have a good idea of space because they have chosen this particular program, and I'm just trying to enhance what they know. So that's one thing I'm involved in. The second thing is Enterprise in Space. Enterprise in Space is a $60 million project to put aloft 100-plus student experiments that are designed by students from kindergarten through university. And these experiments will go on board an orbiter called the NSS Enterprise. This is a project of the National Space Society. So we're real excited about that, and Yerkes is an important place for us to work from. This is sort of our educational hub because the Enterprise in Space program is educationally driven to bring space and science to students all over the globe. So I'm very excited about it.
When you talk and work with the students here and the work you've done over the years that you've been here, what if you would describe what goes through your mind when you're talking to students and you actually can see that light go on and that all of a sudden that oh my gosh moment with these students?
Well, as you can imagine, it's just extraordinary, especially when you take a student that already really they've got the fire, but it has not been lit as hot as it could be. And you see them talking during breaks. You see them walking out the door, talking with their parents, excited about what they're doing, and even coming back the next day and say, you know, I was thinking about, and moving on to that. You know that belly's burning and that verve to learn more and go places that they haven't thought of ever going before has now been lit, and there's a real possibility there. I think that's the most exciting thing that I see with Yerkes. Whenever I leave Yerkes, it's always sort of a sadness because I don't want to leave. It's like the rest of the world stops because what's happening here is so magical and extraordinary, it's hard for me to put it down. It's a wonderful opportunity to be here at Yerkes.
And my last question is, it might be 20 or 30 years from now when, there's a woman or man who sets foot on Mars. What do you think that moment is going to be like?
Oh, wow. You know, I've met people who are candidates for going to Mars, and I've thought about how brave they must be because there are many obstacles, challenges out there that they can't even imagine what there would be. So when I think of a group going to Mars or a colony being on Mars, again, it seems like a natural thing to happen. It will be marvelous, but it will be a natural progression of humanity to move into other worlds.
I want to thank you for talking with me and, more importantly, all the incredible work that you do here.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Hi, I'm Kate Meredith, and I am Director of Education at Yerkes Observatory.
Kate, give us a quick overview of all of your areas of responsibility.
Well, my main responsibility is to bring the community that has supported Yerkes Observatory from the Williams Bay, Lake Geneva area, and the University of Chicago together and keep all the other programs going. So watch out for the finances and with Jim G's help. And we do large National Science Foundation grants to support special projects, so that's one area. The former director did a lot of leadership in the area of accessibility, so we are recognized nationally in the areas of bringing astronomy to blind and visually impaired students and deaf and hard of hearing students, and so a lot of our projects are related to that. We have been active as a result of the former director Vivian Hetty's success in bringing in large grants to do teacher professional development and working in the STEM field. So our current project that is now coming to a close is Skynet Junior Scholars, which was a program to bring the Skynet Robotic Telescope Network, which is a professional grade national or international telescope network, to 4-H students and to allow them to experience and use the tools of astronomy for themselves. Via the internet. So that is one of our big projects.
Jim talked briefly about the program for the blind, and he prefaced it by saying, this always surprises people. Why is that such an important program?
Well, when you think about it, 90% of all the information coming to us from the universe is non-visual. We go to great lengths to make all of this information, the entire electromagnetic spectrum, of which we can only see a tiny, tiny piece. We sighted people go to great lengths to make it visual because that's the way we operate. But it doesn't have to be that way. And so one of our questions is, are there ways that people who are not sighted form mental maps or understand information that we can learn from that will open up more possibilities in how we interpret these data that come to us that are actually tables and graphs and lots of numbers? Other ways can we experience it? And the curiosity about what's out there and what it's like and how big is the universe, that's not exclusive to sighted people, but we. It was Vivian Hetty and her vision for this Yerkes Education Outreach to be inclusive that started thinking and about how do we make that accessible? How do we open up those areas of curiosity and allow people to have access to these things? So in what we're hoping to do in a new grant that we have submitted is to take what is image processing software that we take a non-visual data, which comes in the form of a big table, and make it into an image for sighted people. What else could we do with that data? And we're going to use a group of sighted and a group of blind and visually impaired people and rewrite the software so that we can look at other ways of quote-unquote visualizing the data. So we're looking at three-dimensional sound, surround sound to and sonification of data, tactile images, 3D printing, and we're going to look at ways to do that so that people who are not sighted can go straight from making an image request to then holding their data in their hand or listening to it. So that's our hope, and we do that with the group that's the user group that it'll be like any other universally designed product that has been come on the market, that it will open up all sorts of areas of exploration for everybody. And so that's what we try and do here is be inclusive.
When we look at the fact that this observatory has been here for well over a century, and all the history that's here, and all the space exploration, and the fact that you are working with young people who come here for summer camp, everything that you just talked about, and everything that our listening audience heard in my lead into the Yerkes Observatory, how is all that translated into a 1 week or 2 week camp for these young people who are here, and we're going to be hearing some of their comments in a few minutes? How is all that synthesized to something that, number one, they understand, and number two, it's something that they can take back into their schools and even into their future lives?
Well, we try and make everything we do here immersive. So in spite of the fact that this is over 100-year-old building, we have hundreds of students come through here and learn about and experience astronomy from astronomers, from master teachers, from students, from college students who have all been a part of the observatory culture for many years. They're immersed in that, and they're immersed in that in the hallways. We don't put them in a separate building. We don't try and keep everything safe, although we do try and take care of everything. But we allow them to experience the building. They sit in the historic library. They look through the old telescopes, and we do it all. And we in a context of here's the history. Here is also where we're going with the where modern astronomy, astrophysics, and engineering are now all coming together to do our next generation of exploration. And so they are part of that. It's a multi-generational, historic model of immersive education that's inquiry-based.
How do we put all this into context in terms of all of us, in terms of our everyday lives? space exploration. This is the 47th anniversary of Neil Armstrong on the moon. All these things that we sort of take for granted. How do we move away from taking things for granted and looking at the fact that these are things that are happening today? And when someone looks through that telescope, whether it's the 40-incher or the 27-inch, right, or the 24-inch, rather, 24. And that you might be seeing something that happened thousands or millions of years ago, how do we put that into context as a human being? I mean, I know that's a crazy, crazy, wild question.
Well, that question actually is just the beauty of the struggle. It's the artistry along with the science. It's the looking up to the sky and starting with the constellations and realizing that it's all relative. It is, you're not looking at the sky as it exists in a moment of time for real. This star's light started traveling here 4 light years ago, or that galaxy was 230 million light years ago. It's all a snapshot in times, not one time. And so I find that to just be part of, you know, the artistry of what astronomy is, and that our own curiosity takes us places. As we develop a new technology, it opens up new questions. It is the heart of what science and engineering are about. We build new tools. We design things in order to extend our own human capabilities, to explore new parts of space, to gather new data, to analyze data. But we also have an enduring curiosity, and as we do our best to answer big fundamental questions about the world, but then we come back and we reanalyze, and we set old theories aside in light of new data, and it is a wonderful way of you know, demonstrating the whole process of science and engineering and how they work together. So I don't know if that comes close to answering your question, but that's what I see here happen here all the time.
What is your own background, and how did you get involved in doing all of this?
Well, my background is actually in environmental science. I was a teacher, and I wanted to save the world. So I thought, you know, I was very interested in the environmental science end of things, and I always loved teaching. And then as a teacher, you get tapped on the shoulder and said, will you? And my tap on the shoulder came from an astronomer named Ray Stonecipher in Door County when I was teaching there, and he said, I need someone to teach astronomy at the high school because I want to put this telescope up. It was a group of teachers and a mentor teacher that I'd worked with for many years. And so one thing led to another, and I just said yes when they tapped me on the shoulder. And then I was just very fortunate to have the people at Yerkes were the ones that came up along with my mentor astronomer, Ray, and they taught me what I needed to know. And it was, they came to my observatory. They helped me learn. I came to Yerkes, and this was 20 years ago. And so it was the community. And so part of what really draws me to astronomy is not that I loved astronomy when I was 5 years old. It was the community that said, here is a place where you can keep exploring forever. You'll never be done learning everything, and you don't have to know everything. You don't have to be an expert. We're all excited about it, and it's about the learning. So that's my biggest attraction to being in the astronomy community, is really that it doesn't matter what student comes here or if they're completely passionate about astrophysics. It's, you can come here and learn. You don't have to know all the answers, and here is a group of people who will engage with you, and you can go off and take those lessons of struggle and not knowing and having equipment break and fixing things and those successes, and you can take them off into the world and do whatever you want with them. And astronomy just happens to be the greatest hook that there is to get students to engage with things that they don't think apply to their lives. So, you know, if I wanted it as a high school teacher to teach about ratios and algebra and a lot of difficult sciences, but to show them through a beautiful image and astronomical data was very, very powerful. So I find astronomy as a teaching venue to be extraordinary, second to none.
And we'll have a chance to wrap things up with Kate in a few minutes. But first, we now have an opportunity to sit down and chat with some of the students who are actually engaged in all of the really great scientific activities going on at the Yerkes Observatory.
We have a chance to speak to some students who are involved in the McEwen Scholar Program here at Yerkes Observatory. And if you would introduce yourself, please, and where you go to school.
My name is Brianna Thompson, and I'm a sophomore at Williams Bay High School.
Brianna, let me first ask you, you're a student right here in the area at Williams Bay High School, and you can see the observatory from the high school. I mean, I know where the high school is. I know where Yerkes is. Prior to you being here as a McEwen Scholar, how many times over the years have you actually been here at the observatory?
I used to come here a lot when I was younger for their family nights with my family, and I just started coming here regularly in February as a McEwen Scholar.
Why did you apply for this program as far as becoming a McEwen Scholar, and what does it mean to you?
Because ever since I did start doing family nights here, I realized that I was really interested in astronomy and everything that had to do with astronomy, and I knew from like a very young age that I wanted to do it for a long time. And then I was talking to Kara Robotham, who's the coordinator of the McEwen Scholars Program, and she recommended me for it. And it means a lot to me because it's a great program for me to be able to learn things that I wouldn't be able to learn anywhere else.
And I assume that you've had a number of opportunities of actually looking through the big telescope, I mean the 40-inch refractor.
Yes, I've had a couple experiences looking through the 40-inch. More of my viewing opportunities are based around the 24-inch reflector.
When you're actually viewing it, and let's say you're doing a night viewing, describe for our listeners what it's like for you. I mean, just give us some of your own thoughts. If you would describe what it's like viewing that through that telescope.
It's really awesome because you see pictures of things online, and it's a whole different experience being able to actually point the telescope yourself and look at things yourself instead of just like Googling a picture, and being able to see it like in real time, like for yourself, is a really awesome experience.
If you would introduce yourself and where you go to school.
My name is Rowan. I go to school here in Williams Bay at the junior high.
And Rowan, in the past, how many times have you been here at Yerkes?
I would say about half dozen times or so before I became a McEwen Scholar.
Why did you apply for the McEwen Scholar Program, and what does it mean to you to actually be an actual scholar?
It's really fun because you get to meet with a lot of people, share ideas, share experiments, work on a lot of different projects.
What's the difference between sitting in a classroom and looking at photographs in a book or something online, you know, on the internet, and actually being here at this observatory, which has been here for well over 100 years and has a lot of history? What's the difference for you for actually being here and observing things that are actually happening as, you know, as you're watching them in space when you're looking through that telescope?
It makes you feel like you're there with the planet or the star, and it's right in front of you, not just on the pages of a book. It's truly there.
When you're sitting in your eighth grade science class and they're talking about space, or someone brings up the Hubble Space Telescope that's revolving around the Earth every 93 minutes or thereabouts, and you can say that you were actually here at Yerkes, how do you think your classmates are going to react to that?
Some of them think the Yerkes is cool. I've always tried to advertise coming to Yerkes to a lot of my classmates, getting them to come to summer camps. A few of them have, and they think it's pretty cool, and I've always tried to get them to come to Yerkes and see how much fun they have.
And if you would introduce yourself and tell me what grade you're in and at which school you attend.
I'm Ben. I go to eighth grade in Trumbull, Wisconsin, and I am a McEwen Scholar here at Yerkes.
So far, Ben, what has this meant for you as far as being a scholar and actually experiencing all the things that you've experienced here this summer so far?
So my school doesn't actually offer a lot of the things I want to learn about, and so I found that becoming a McEwen Scholar here was a really great opportunity to sort of focus in on some of the stuff that I really want to learn about. And it's awesome to be able to work with people and share projects and the like.
So tell me one thing so far that you've learned that you did not know about before you became a scholar that is really the coolest thing so far that you could share with our listening audience.
I would have to say it's that, even the grand scale of space is amazing. Like how the distance from the sun to the earth is known as an AU, and there are even some of the closest bodies are 600,000 AU away, and that it's just amazing how large this dimension in which we live is.
The class session that you were just in a few minutes ago before we started this interview was a library, and I'm sure you know that Edwin Hubble did his research here for his dissertation, for his PhD, at the University of Chicago. As you're walking around here, do you ever think like, wow, you know, Albert Einstein was here in 1921, Dr. Hubble was here? I mean, do you ever sort of think about that at all?
Yes, it's sort of surreal to think that I'm standing where Einstein probably walked, or this is where he stood to take a picture, or that he looked through this telescope, or did his research on this desk. It's amazing to be in this like historical place where so much stuff happened.
And as I asked Rowan a few minutes ago, what's one thing that if your fellow classmates at your school this coming year would say, you know, Ben, you know, what's the absolute neatest thing that you learned this summer as a McEwen Scholar? What would come to mind first for you?
I would have to say that, like, there are many things. Space is gigantic. There are so many things it'd be hard to name. It's impossible to decide, to be honest. I would say that it's everything I've learned is the coolest thing.
And at this point in your life, when you think of what you might want to do when you're older and what you might want to study in college, have you thought about that?
Yes, actually. I've wanted to be many things, but like being here at Yerkes really helped solidify that I want to be definitely some sort of engineer that deals with space, because it's just amazing to feel like you're a part of this amazing place that we live in, and that you're helping, you're making discoveries and learning about things that are just so amazing.
Okay, thank you. And if you would introduce yourself, and you're one of the interns here, I know.
My name is Lindsay. I'm from the University of Chicago, and I just finished my first year.
So tell me, as an intern, what are some of your areas of responsibility? And before you answer that, Lindsay, why did you want to become an intern?
So I wanted to become an intern because I came here for an undergraduate weekend in the fall, and I had such an amazing time working with the telescopes here and meeting all of the professors, and then I got involved in one of them during the year, and it was just such a great experience that I really knew that I wanted to come back during the summer.
During the summer as an intern, describe what your typical day is like.
I am primarily working with Stone Edge Observatory, which is a telescope in California that is very involved with Yerkes. And I have a partner project with another intern here working on measuring magnitudes. So most of our work is getting pictures back from our telescopes at night and then going through the data analysis during the day and figuring out what we need to do with them to get magnitudes back.
Describe very briefly for our listening audience, since they can't see what you might be describing, and neither can I because we're just here chatting about it. But as you're analyzing the data, as you're analyzing the information that you're getting back from the observatory in California, what kinds of things are you looking at when you're actually looking at the, you know, those data?
So the hopeful focus for the project right now is going to be on supernova. So we are taking pictures of them and then figuring out where exactly the supernova is in the picture, which you would think would be easy, but sometimes it's quite difficult to find. And then isolating the light from the supernova and trying to figure out what brightness it has compared to the galaxy that it is in.
And my last question before we speak to another intern, have you seen any photographs as an intern that have actually been taken by the Hubble Space Telescope?
I have definitely seen some online, and they are very cool, but I actually think it's a really cool experience as well to take pictures yourself and get to see them back. Even if they're not as impressive, it's just amazing to be like, I took this picture and not a telescope that was in space.
If you would introduce yourself and where you go to school, what you're studying, and then we'll talk about your role as an intern.
My name is Mikhail Lewis. I'm a second year at the University of Chicago.
And where did you go to high school?
I went to high school in Tallahassee, Florida at Leon High School.
As you looked at your role as an intern this summer, what are some of the experiences so far that you did not expect that have really opened your eyes to space and also working with younger students?
Yeah, so, I mean, of course, at an observatory, I would expect to look through a telescope. But the access to telescopes this big is, like, it's pretty cool, especially, so there's this thing called Skynet, which is a robotic telescope network where students can type in the object they want to see, and they type in the exposure time, and in a few days, they'll get an image back. And just the access to that amount of telescope time is really cool.
Your experiences as an intern, how do you see this impacting your life once you graduate from the University of Chicago?
I'm having some like really good experiences here in the way. So I'm working on, let me back up a little bit. So I'm working on a project right now where I'm putting together a non-professional's guide for estimating exposure times, especially in the application of robotic telescope networks. And so it's really hard, but I'm learning a lot. And there's this guy I'm working with who is like a fantastic mentor. And the access to these like great minds that will help me with what I'm doing is really good. And so as far as my career path, I suppose I'm just learning a lot. And learning how to do these difficult projects.
And my last question for you is, when you finish your undergraduate program at the University of Chicago, what are your plans after that?
Grad school. So right now I'm studying math. I hope to study math. I haven't declared yet, but that's the plan. And so what I'm really, my interest for grad school, what I think I want to study right now when I go to grad school is a theory, or not a theory, but just sort of a unified study of symbolic systems and narrative forms. So I'm really interested in math as a symbolic system. I'm also interested in history as a symbolic system. I'm interested in history as a narrative form, and I'm also interested in something like math as a narrative form, because proofs, in a way, have this sort of arc of logical connections in the same way that a myth does, in the same way that a poem does. And it's the same sort of flow of thoughts that you see in literature, that you see in math.
Thank you so much for your comments, and best of luck to you.
Thank you.
As we wrap things up, Kate, you had the opportunity of listening to the comments of the scholars as well as the interns. As you were hearing them with their comments about what it means to them to be here, particularly the students who are in junior high school, the students who are going into eighth grade, as well as the interns who are at the University of Chicago, what kinds of thoughts were going through your mind as you were hearing all those comments that they were making?
Well, that was really thrilling, actually, because they said the things that are nearest to my heart. I did not hear them telling you the list of facts that they learned or a litany of, you know, experiences or jobs that they had to do. It's what touched them about the subject and about being here and the importance of the space of the observatory itself. And so that was just very heartening for me to hear from them. And we, you know, to think that they are gaining the things, they're seeing things very similarly to how I have seen them, about what's important about the space, the mentorship, the being with other students, the community, the sharing, the culture of astronomy and science at its very best. And that makes me feel really good.
And my last question for you is this, obviously, everything that you've said, it seems to me that this is not just a job for you, but what touches you the most each and every day that you are here at Yerkes with all the history that is here, whether it's Einstein or Hubble or just, you know, everything that has gone on and that's going on right now as we sit here?
It is the opportunity to have everybody of all ages and all abilities and to be part of what is historically been an institution of learning, but learning for a select few. And so to open these doors wide and with the help of the wonderful community leaders here in Williams Bay and the university to keep inviting a wider and wider audience to be part of this.
Well, I want to thank you for taking your time today because I know it's busy, all kinds of things going on. And I hope you enjoy the WGTD Radio Theater's live broadcast coming up in just a few minutes. Einstein and Hubble lost somewhere in space.
I am in the audience.
In wrapping things up, I'd like to thank all of our guests from the Yerkes Observatory, both the director, Jim G., and Kate Meredith, the education coordinator, all of the students who are participating in the summer camp this summer, and the others we spoke to this morning. For Education Matters, I'm your host, Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
And a very pleasant good morning, everyone. I'm Steve Brown, co-executive producer of the WGTD Radio Theater. This morning, we're pleased to present a brand new science fiction story, Einstein and Hubble, Lost Somewhere in Space. This original story is created and written by Michael Ulstrup and myself and stars Siegfried Christoph as Dr. Albert Einstein and Andrew Potter as Dr. Edwin Hubble. And joining them are stars from the award-winning 91.1 Players. As always, support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha law firm of Aaliyah, Dumay, and McTernan. Support also comes from the not-for-profit Brown Ulster Performing Arts Foundation, located in Salem, Wisconsin. And now, sit back and relax and hold on tight for today's astronomical adventure, Einstein and Hubble, Lost Somewhere in Space.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Edwin Hubble. Sitting here in the library at Yerkes Observatory brings back many memories to the days I spent while working on my PhD dissertation at the University of Chicago. I spent many years at the University of Chicago as both an undergraduate and a graduate student. You may think it a bit strange that I brought my basketball into the library, but I loved the game. In fact, at 6'2", I was the starring forward at the University of Chicago Maroons Big Ten Championship teams in 1907 and 08, and in 08 and 09. This basketball was taken into space back in May of 2009, when another graduate from the University of Chicago, astronaut John Grunsfeld, took the basketball, this same one, when we beat Indiana University in 1909 into space aboard the space shuttle Atlantis. When Grunsfeld returned to Earth, he also returned this basketball to the university, and it is currently on display at the Gerald Ratner Athletic Center on the UC campus in Hyde Park, Illinois. One other thing I should mention, when astronaut Grunsfeld was on a previous mission into space, he took an eyepiece from a telescope that I used right here at the Yerkes Observatory into space. Simply amazing. I see that a good friend of mine has finally arrived here at the library here at Yerkes. He is not always the most punctual, but when he arrives, everyone usually knows of his presence. Ladies and gentlemen, I am very pleased to introduce my distinguished and very dear friend, Dr. Albert Einstein.
Danke sehr, mein guter Freund.
You are most welcome, Albert. I know that you would like to make some opening comments here this morning at one of our favorite places, the library at the Yerkes Observatory.
Ja, das ist richtig.
I relinquish the floor to my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Albert Einstein.